And greetings. Welcome to The Dividing Line. My name is James White, coming to you live from Boise, Idaho, where the traffic is surprisingly bad. The lights take like forever. We always complain about traffic wherever it is we live until you go someplace else. Maybe it's just a new growth or something, and they haven't figured out how to make the traffic work yet. I don't know. But anyways, here's where we are. I left Moscow, Idaho, before sunrise this morning, right at 5 a.m. I was up very early this morning, getting the unit ready to go. If you've never lived the RV life like I'm living it, there is preparation. You don't just simply jump out the door and get in and start going, because this is a little house, and basically every time you pull it anywhere, it's going to go through at least 20 earthquakes before you get to where you're going. And so I've developed the checklist, double checking, triple checking, because you leave a cupboard ajar and everything in it's going to be all over the floor, probably broken by the time you get where you're going, that kind of stuff. Those shower doors need to be latched in place. That was one of the first things the guy at the RV place said, I'm going to save you $1,500. Make sure to do this, and showed me how to make sure it was locked in place. So when someone talks about something costing $1,500 to repair, I lock that in place after every shower, even if I'm not going anywhere. I'm not taking any chances on that whatsoever. But here we are, just for the evening. Tomorrow evening, me and Buddy the Elf will be visiting with Chris Arnold. Yeah, I've arranged for Buddy to be with. No, I really haven't. But heading for Reno, Nevada. That's a long drive. Today was long. My goodness. By the way, there are two downhills coming from Moscow to Boise that get up to 7% grade. And let me tell you something. When you've got 9,000 pounds behind you and your truck weighs about 8,000 pounds, it's not a relaxing thing to go down a 7% grade. There was lots of two-lane mountainous stuff today that's, again, you got to do it. Got to learn how to do it. I did my first hookup in the dark this morning. That was, only thing I haven't done yet that I'm sure I will before long is unhooking and setting up and then hooking up and desetting up in the rain, because that I haven't yet pulled off, but that's because I haven't had a reason to. So every new challenge, once you get it done, it's like, okay, that's how you do it. And you go on from there. I'm going to give you a report on my weekend in Moscow in a second. But given that President Biden just spoke, and in my opinion, the reason he was gone for days was they were just getting him rested up and prepped to do this. I think it literally takes that long to get him ready to read the teleprompter and do that kind of stuff. About the debacle in Afghanistan, and it is a debacle. I listened to his comments, and then Pastor Luke gave a link, and why didn't that come up? Where is it? There it is. This is from Fox News. Afghans who clung to departing U.S. plane fall to their death in chaos that left 7 dead. And there's a picture of Afghans running next to a C-17 transport and grabbing hold of stuff and holding on to stuff. And it took off. And eventually they fell off and died. I mean, this is making Hanoi, not Hanoi, Saigon, look like it was handled well. This is a, it's a debacle. It's chaos. It is, I hold the CRT promoting, the U.S. military was involved in promoting, same-sex transgender rights stuff in Afghanistan. And there's no Christian has any basis for saying anything other than just judgment, just judgment. This has been handled. It's a complete disaster on Biden's part, but it's been a complete disaster since Bush. And I know we have wonderful service people who served well in Afghanistan and Iraq. God bless you. Doesn't change the reality that at the time, I remember, I'm old enough to remember, at the time, there were many people who reminded us, no one's ever conquered these people. Every great empire has tried, and you might be able to overwhelm them with your superior forces briefly, but you're never going to hold Afghanistan. It's just not possible, because these people do not love life. They love their power and their tradition. And so you can't control a people like that. You can't establish a democracy or freedom. And yeah, certainly there are a lot of Afghans who have been very thankful to have had freedoms and things like that. And most of them will die. The blood that will be flowing and is already flowing through the streets of Afghanistan at the hands of the Taliban obviously demonstrates that that form of Islam is purely satanic. At its core, it is just as much a part of the culture of death as the abortionists are. It's a false religion, and it kills. Notice I did differentiate between different forms of Islam. I am well aware of the later developments in Sharia and the control of jihad. I know. I get all of that. Doesn't change the fact that the men who are enslaving every woman in the nation, destroying every school that would dare to educate women, girls, and slaughtering people left and right, is a form of Islam. It is a fundamentalist form of Islam. And these men take the Quran as, well, let's be honest, they take the particular Salafi Wahhabi tradition that they think is identical with what Muhammad taught. And that's the basis upon which they're doing all these things. How bad can it be when you will try to hold on to the side of a C-17 and fall to your death rather than fall into the hands of the Taliban? How bad are they? They are demonically bad. Demonically bad. And it's not just regular Afghans. The Christians, they will be killing Christians right, left, and center. There will be many martyr souls under the altar as a result of all of this. And not only do we need to pray for them, but let's just be perfectly honest here. This is going to be the greatest encouragement to terrorism globally since 9/11. Since 9/11. And so I predict a global uptick, extensively so, in Islamic terrorism in Western countries, in Europe, in the United States, because they have been emboldened by the collapsing United States morally, ethically, economically, militarily, socially. They have been emboldened by what they have seen. And in their twisted, demented world, this is a sign that Allah is blessing them. And so just get ready. And see that the thing that really concerns me is that when I say that, I am well aware of the fact that what that ends up meaning is an even greater hesitancy on the part of believers to reach out to the Muslim because, well, I can't tell by looking whether this is a Wahhabi or non, I mean, no difference between a Sunni and a Shia, right? And so my concern is the very thing that I spoke about yesterday when I preached at Christ Church in Moscow. There are two locations and four services, is my understanding, the church. And they call it the Logos Fieldhouse at Logos School. And I will not say Logos without going, it's either Logos or Logos. It cannot be Logos. But anyway, it's basically the gym, a pretty large facility. I'm not sure how many people were there. It was packed out. Unfortunately, it was a very warm weekend, highs in the upper 90s. Well, actually, I think it only made middle 90s because of the smoke. At least that was the only advantage to all the smoke, was it didn't get quite as hot as they had expected it to. But it still got quite hot, and there was no air conditioning. And Doug Wilson preached the first service, the 8:30, and then I preached the 10:30 service. And my topic was from John 8, and it was my sermon. It is a message I have delivered more than once, though since I don't use notes, it's always a little bit different each time. From John 8, about reaching out with a clear and compelling message to our Muslim friends. And in fact, I Googled it before service started, and there was a mosque, or at least an Islamic center. Though looking at the pictures, I'm sure there was a small mosque there near the University of Idaho that was within 1 mile, was 8/10 of a mile from where we were. So there is a community there. It's not a large community. But my concern is the very thing that I warned about, that there's that, in many a conversation, there's that brief moment where the door slides open and each one of us has to make the decision whether we're going to step through. And the more reasons and causes of hesitation, the more likely it is that we're going to find an excuse not to walk through that door and present the gospel to the Muslim people. And it is my belief, obviously, that we especially are the ones that need to be bringing that message to them, because it's consistent. We're strongly and focusedly Trinitarian, and we're the ones that have a consistent message to deliver to them. And so I'm hoping that an uptick in jihadist activity and violence will not, as a result, lead to a diminishment of gospel proclamation. So we definitely pray for what's going on in the world. I certainly pray for the people who are being left behind, that we are abandoning. they tried to do what was right, and we cut and run. It's disgusting. It really, really is. So anyway, for those who didn't know, I did notice this morning that one of the DWDS websites, DWDS is Doug Wilson Derangement Syndrome. One of the DWDS websites had picked up on the reality, which no one had hidden, that I was speaking at the Grace Agenda Conference. I haven't checked, but I think my assumption is that the Cross Politic episode that I was on live in studio probably dropped Sunday night. Rich said he heard somebody saying it was a good episode, so it probably did drop on Sunday night. And that was really enjoyable. Only time I saw Chocolate Knox, I saw Toby and but I didn't see Chocolate Knox. Gabe was stuck with me for a while, first day that I got there. We had challenges, RV challenges, shall we say. But again, I managed to get through, and you learn a lot in the process, and it's just a necessary thing. You know, it's sort of like training in the military. You just got to go through it. And so I didn't see Chocolate Knox the whole rest of the weekend. I'm not sure if he was just avoiding me or just what, but anyways, we had a good Cross Politic episode. Talked about a lot of serious stuff and important stuff, and hopefully that was useful to folks. And Doug and I were going to record a bunch of other stuff, but that's their biggest conference of the year. Last year they had 900 people at it. That was a big increase from the year before. I think it's gone 600, 900, 1600 this time, which up there in Moscow meant there's no buildings big enough to hold that many people. And so I was told, I don't know how many weeks ago, that I would need to make the same presentation two times in different locations. So once at one location, then again, another location. That ended up being, I did it only half an hour in between. And I'll be perfectly upfront with you. My first presentation, I did not like. It was not properly organized. Half an hour later, I did it again. It was a lot better. So those of you who were at the Nazarene Church, I think. Is that the way it was? Or was it the other way around? Yeah. People in Nazarene Church, I apologize. That wasn't as good as I had wanted it to be. And the folks at Trinity, at least I think it was more understandable and clear exactly where I was going. I always critique myself from along those lines. But that was in the afternoon. In the morning, I really got to do something enjoyable. I was the commencement speaker for New St. Andrews. They have the largest incoming freshman class they've ever had. And so I got to be the speaker. And so you have to bring your academic gown, and man, those things are hot. I think they were designed by German monks in the 1600s to stay warm in Germany. They will keep you warm. I about died. But really, I only had 20 minutes. I think I kept it 17, 18. Yay for me. Did you hear that, Jeff? 17, 18 is supposed to be pretty good. Anyway, I basically said to the students that I wanted to say something to them that I would hope that they would remember 4 years later. And basically it was a exhortation to not lose your spiritual life while going to a Christian school. Because a lot of people do. You get your head crammed full of facts and data, and your faith becomes frigid cold. And so I challenged them to graduate with a greater passion for Christ than they were beginning with now. And got a lot of positive comments on that and really enjoyed that opportunity. And then, like I said, preached. I should make a comment. This is the second CREC church that I've preached at. I preached at my dear brother Jeff Neal's church in Fort Worth area, a number of years ago. And most people are not accustomed to a highly developed liturgy in a Protestant context. So, for example, the music. Wow. Four parts, the soprano starting at one time, and the altos at another, and the tenor is another, and the bass is another, and the whole congregation's involved in it. There's much more responsive stuff in a CREC context. In other words, the people speaking back when the pastor says this and the people respond this way. So it's really, really interesting and very, very enjoyable. If you're not used to that, you sort of feel a little uncomfortable, sort of, what am I supposed to be doing? But I can't imagine it'd take you too long to get over that. And of course, the one thing that was unusual was I get up there and I look out over this sea of faces, and it was very well attended. And it's all moving because everybody's sitting there doing this number. And they had asked me, by the way, that's my commencement thing. I ended up in the commencement thing. Yay. They asked me for an outline. It took them long enough just to get a text from me, but they asked me for an outline of the sermon. And I'm like, I don't use outlines. Okay. So I get there and I left it in the car. I should have grabbed it. Truck, actually. But everybody gets the same thing. And if you have two different sermons, then it's different. I suppose if you're doing the same sermon, then it's a lot easier. But Doug's outline, I mean, we're talking almost the whole sermon was in there. Aside from miscellaneous remarks, pretty much the whole sermon was right there. And then you turn the page and there's mine. Reference, notes, blank page. I did point that out, and Doug did get a good chuckle out of that, so did everybody else, that there was such a major difference between us. But again, everyone really listened carefully. And this, Rich knows what this is like, because he goes G3 and found out he's going to G3 again this year too. I did not even know that until a few moments ago. But when you get this opportunity to get out and see people, and there were 1,000 people there from someplace other than Moscow. A lot of people want to take pictures. They want you to sign a book. I really need to start carrying a pen with me because people just don't carry pens anymore. And I used to carry a pen all the time, but the only reason I need a pen is to sign books, basically. But then there's the testimonies. I don't know how to explain it. I hesitate to even talk about it publicly because people are like, oh, you're just patting yourself on the back or whatever. No. I rarely know what to say. When people come up and they, of course, it's always funny when people say, I've been listening to you for a long time. I mean, since like 2015. And 2015 to me seems like not very long ago. You know, we started Alpha Omega Ministries a long time ago, and Dividing Line started in the 80s, and our archives only go back to 98, but still. But when they start talking about how the Lord has used Alpha and Omega Ministries to bring them out of every religious group that we deal with and every non-religious group that we deal with, I've had somebody at some point come up to me and say, and it's always interesting how they happen to, quote, stumble upon our information. Very often these days, it's either I found out about you through Jeff Durbin, or because I found out about you, then I learned about Jeff Durbin. So Apologia gets thrown in there, joined at the hip. Especially when you're talking with people who've come out of Mormonism, as I did this weekend. A young man coming out of Mormonism, and it was the debates, it was the programs, people coming out of Roman Catholicism and Islam and abusive King James only fundamentalist churches and stuff like that. And I don't think I respond all that well. I'll be honest. I'll apologize to everybody ahead of time. I just don't always know what to say. Then thank you very much. That's fantastic. That's so encouraging, because it is encouraging. It's why we do all of this. So yesterday, Doug told me, most of the people go out that door back there, so try to make your way back there. Okay. Well, I get back there, and he is swamped by kids. I can barely see him. And I'm like, this is weird. And I finally fight through the crowd enough. You know what he's doing? He's sitting there. Because I wondered, he's not that short a guy. Why is he sitting down? He's sitting there, and he has a metal pail about that far around, filled with Hershey's Kisses. And all the kids are getting their chocolate fix before lunch from Uncle Dougie. That's sort of like, I'm not sure that's fair. never seen that before. But anyway, by the way, once I left, I had lunch with Doug and his wife. What a wonderful woman she is. Just the picture of hospitality. Just awesome. Even did a load of laundry at their house. I had to. I don't have a washer and dryer in this thing. Anyway, a wonderful, wonderful time in that context. But I had to leave earlier, and you can get everywhere in Moscow in about 6 minutes. Normally less. So I had run back here, gotten changed, and I let Doug know I was coming. I get this text message from Doug, and I've kept it because it was about eschatology, and I'm reading it because I had said I'm going to run by the RV and get changed, and I wasn't sure what that had to do with eschatology. And then I realized somehow he had activated the voice activation thing and had recorded an answer he was given to somebody he was talking to and then sent it to me as a text message. We had some interesting experiences this weekend. So wonderful time, great folks, great singing, really, really, really good singing everywhere we went. And I was surprised at how many of the songs Doug had been involved in putting together, too. It was interesting. That's an aspect of his stuff. Okay, so great time. And a lot of you have been asking. In March of 2020, I was supposed to go to Moscow for my first time, March of 2020. And that was right as everything shut down. and they were talking about travel bans and stopping airline flying and all that kind of stuff. And so we decided it was best to cancel everything. So both of us want to do those debates. And the debates were going to be on paedal communion and on the textual issues, because Doug and I have done a book together, sort of small book, debate book. We did a credenda agenda written debate. It was somewhere in the 90s, 96-ish, maybe 98, don't remember. So this would be a live debate. Obviously try to hook it in with New St. Andrews and stuff like that. And so we're looking back at March again. Apologia has planted a church in Salt Lake City. And so I'm need to get up there and do my duty, both to as a individual reaching out to Mormons as well as a pastor there, and visit other churches that have invited me up there, and looking forward to doing that. And once you're in Salt Lake City, you're about halfway to Moscow, though I will have to find some other way of getting there other than dragging this thing up those 7% grades on US 95. Mm-mm. No, I like my little truck and I have no reason to abuse it in that particular fashion. So a lot of people have been asking, we're looking at March, April. Obviously, if the LDS Church decides to finally have a general conference again, and I'm sort of starting to wonder if they're going to sell that big conference building they built to Marriott. Could you imagine that as the place to stay while visiting Temple Square? And they'd sell it to Marriott. They ain't sell it to anybody else, I guarantee you that. They just haven't had live conference since October of 19 when we were up there. Remember, we had the debate up there at the University of Utah. If they have live conference and the way things are going, I can pretty well guarantee you there won't be a live October conference. No way. In fact, someone sent me a statement from the first presidency of the LDS Church encouraging all the members to vax up and mask up. I mean, the Mormons are just panicked about COVID, which, again, I just go, what happened to your temple garments? I mean, back in the 80s, the Mormons told me all about the blessings of your temple garments and all that kind of stuff. And evidently that's not the case anymore. So let's hope that we can work that out. And the prayers of God's people to protect the unit I'm sitting in right now and the truck that's sitting out front as well and the person driving all those things. So we can keep doing that kind of stuff. And there are a bunch of folks up in Moscow that were talking about. They'd seen the live shows that we're doing here and knew I was road tripping up there and stuff like that. So that's cool. All right. Next thing. I know I've taken a lot of time there. Apologize. I don't apologize for being, and hopefully I was very clear. I'm very, very thankful. I was treated wonderfully. Everybody up there was wonderful. And I'm gonna make all the Doug Wilson derangement syndrome sufferers have a relapse right now. I spent a lot of time with Doug. Doug was very kind with his time with me. We had great conversations. And I'd say the thing I took away from that and those conversations is that he is exactly what he says he is. He walks the walk, talks the talk, lives the life. Unfortunately, I've been around the gum stump enough times to know that that's not always the case. I've known enough people to know I can see faces. I could say names. Well known, but a huge difference between what they are out in public and what they are in private or in a less public context. And Doug's Doug. He is, that's what he is all the time. He's also much geekier than I think most people know. Yeah. Yeah. He's preaching from an iPad now. He has a Apple Watch, and yeah, we did share that geekiness. We're both Scottish too, which is sort of frightening. And though we have the same demented sense of humor, his vocabulary is just so far beyond mine that sometimes I'm not sure when he's making a joke or not. So anyways, everybody up there, elders, Ben Zorns, everybody. In fact, oh, well, let me check something real quick here. No, it's this one here. Oh, maybe. Aha. Okay. So Ben Zorns, I hope he doesn't mind if I read this. It's public. So Ben gave the, I know I'm taking more time, but the world's not going to end. I haven't done this for a few days. Ben gave the, I'm not sure what it's called, charge, devotion, thoughts, word, I don't know, before partaking of the supper. And I want you, I'm not going to read all of it, but this is what he wrote. So he just sent it to me. I just contacted him on Twitter. The family unit is in tatters. Relationships are scarred by generations of multiple divorces and remarriages. The homes of our nation are fatherless, while an overweening maternal state coddles citizens like they're helpless babies instead of free men. Here's the line. Our churches have pulpits which are filled with women of both sexes. So I'm sitting there in the first service. Our churches have pulpits which are filled with women of both sexes. And I was like, it took me a second to process that one through and go, whoa, ow. I mean, that's that's a short sentence that contains a nuclear bomb in it. I mean, our churches have pulpits which are filled with women of both sexes. If you want to read the whole thing, go to Ben Zorns, BENZORNES.com. Loneliness Be Gone. It's, I think it's on his blog. It's August 16th. So yeah, today. It'll be the first one that pops up. Our churches have pulpits which are filled with women of both sexes. I hope that catches on personally. That deserves to catch on. It really does. That deserves to catch on. But thank you, Ben, for linking me. Because someone had included me and him. Oh, it was a picture. He photobombed a picture inadvertently. And he had commented on it. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to ask him if what he wrote, what he said. Because it was the exact same comments each time. So I knew he was reading it. There it was. So I hope you enjoy that. As much as I did. All right. I'm obviously not going to get to everything I was planning on today, but big news in my life that probably is only big news in my life and about 100 other people on the planet. But while I've been traveling, and we knew it was coming, and my set's been ordered, but while I've been traveling, the ECM volumes for Mark came out. Aren't you all thrilled? You should be. Let me explain why. ECM, as you probably know, or as you've heard me say in the past, but if you're new to the program, ECM is Editio Critico Maior. It is the currently most exhaustive full edition of scholarly edition, critical edition of the Greek New Testament. Right now, only Mark, Acts, and the general epistles are finished. I think John's next. But it's all due by 2030, so it's going to start coming a little bit faster than it has. I was told when I was in Munster in January of 2019 that Mark was done. Well, it took over 2 years for Mark to see the light of day, even though it was done in January of 2019. And so the printed edition is on its way, and who knows, maybe it'll be there by the time I get back. But the electronic edition is already available. And so if you recall in the past, and I have to be doing more of this, and this more than anything else, to be honest with you, illustrates the schizophrenia that I experience today. I still have a passion for textual criticism. I have a passion for the history of the text. I think this is important work. I'm even more committed to doing it as a post-millennialist than I was before, because it's going to be needed long into the future. But I still feel the schizophrenia, because how different from vaccine mandates and passports and tyrants, petty, tiny little bureaucratic tyrants that no one ever voted for, who now think they have the very power of God in their hands. How far from that is a discussion of CBGM and ECM and textual variants and P45? It feels like a different life, a different planet. It's not. When I often point out, for example, that there are no textual variants in 1 Corinthians 6 when it says, and such were some of you. There are no manuscripts to say such are some of you. Well, you've got to have that foundation. Someone's got to do that work. So there's a connection there. But still, it makes me feel schizophrenic. So if it's been a long time, so let me show you what the ECM looks like. So here is Mark 1:1. And this was, of all the variants in Mark, and I've had very little time. I've had no time since this became available just a few days ago to look up other particularly interesting variants in Mark. But thankfully, the first one that comes up when you bring it up anyways is one of the most interesting variants in the Gospel of Mark. Some of you will recall that in my debate with Shabir Ali in 2006 at Biola University, this is a variant that Shabir brought up. And of course, I knew about it, but it was one that he quoted. And so I was very interested in knowing the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And so in the ECM data, which includes the CBGM data as well, you define where you are by the word positions. So the space before is 1, then 2, then 3, then 4, then 5, then 6, 7, 8. And so it's positions 12 through 16. That might be somewhat counterintuitive as to why they do it that way, but it's the only way to actually make it work. So some manuscripts do not contain the Son of God. Or some manuscripts have Son of God without. So for example, here's the A reading is Huiu Tu Theou. So Huiu Tu Theou, the red up here. Huiu Tu Theou, Son of God. Here's the reading. Son of God, but without two theou, these manuscripts. Son of the Lord, 1241. The Son of God, 32740. No son at all, just simply the one of God. And then it's omitted by Sinaiticus, 038-28-1555, and Lectionary 20-22-11. ZZ means these are manuscripts that will be cited elsewhere in Mark. Notice my precious little P45 there. But of course, that means it is not contained in this particular manuscript. And just notice something in passing, because I mentioned this on a program last week or before. Notice the first four here, P45, P84, P88, and P137. All the papyri, there are only four papyri manuscripts that have any portion whatsoever of Mark. And all of them do not contain this. Why? Because it's the very beginning of the book. And as I said, beginnings and ends of books are most likely the ones that will be damaged in that situation. So the point being that the ECM does have Son of God in its reading. You'll notice here is the local stemma. So this, the idea here is the original text, the ausgang text, leading to the A reading. The A reading is Son of God. And then all the other readings are derivative from Son of God. And then you have your coherence at variant passages. This is looking at the consistency of, it's called coherence between manuscripts. I won't go into it right now. We still need to do more of this in the future. And then your coherence in attestations. And I can't even notice how I have to scroll just in light of how many manuscripts we have for Mark to show where they all fall and how they are related to one another and things like that. Now, I'd have to drop down to where P45 is found, because then you could see where it fits into this schema of things. That's going to be one of the main things I need to be working on myself. And then here is general textual flow. Again, I do notice that this is much larger, much wider than in the pastoral epistles and in Acts, because we just have so many more manuscripts of Mark, obviously, than we do the others. But so obviously, this is, CBGM is not the end of the discussion. It's the beginning of a discussion. But one thing that is very, very important about CBGM is that we now have a generally available computer database, and when it's finished, of the entire New Testament, available to anyone, that is far more in depth, far more specific than we've ever produced before, that we've ever even dreamed of before. It's hard for me to explain, honestly, what textual critics only 60 years ago would have thought of what we have today, let alone the Erasmuses and everyone who came before. Looking at what we have now, it's just like, it's astonishing. And apologetically, having that kind of information is vitally important. I see the TR guys poo-pooing it, all the rest of this stuff, and I just think that's sad. But so obviously, one of the things that we will be doing more of when I get home, and then I have to make it so I, even when I'm traveling, I can still work on these issues, is we've got to be doing more stuff on CBGM, because I'm finally able to get back to what I've been working on before now that we have Mark. Mark increases the data set that I have for manuscript P45. By 55% over what I had just for Axe. And so now what I can do finally is approach the question of the textual sources that the scribe of P45 used for Mark and for Axe. But now I can use CBGM databases to do that. And I'm excited about that. And as Rich just reminded me, the reason that we can buy that set of books and make it possible for me to be doing that work even while traveling is because you help support us and you help support the Ministry Resource List and the Travel Fund. Da-da-da-da. I really stink at marketing, but you are the ones that make that possible. So for all 11 of you who really go, yeah, that's important. We need all 11 of you to be supporting our work in that way. All right. I had Gregory all queued up and stuff. Went too long. I should have known I was going to go too long because I had just too enjoyable a time at the Grace Agenda Conference and meeting everybody up there and stuff like that. But I did queue up, and so I might as well go ahead and give you this information, and then we can at least read this one, and we're ready to go for the next program. And if I really push myself hard today and get everything done and get out of here at a really decent time tomorrow morning, who knows? Maybe I've got a shot at tomorrow, too. It's a long leg. I'm not sure. I don't want to promise anything along those lines. But I did want to – I have often referred to the fact that the best Quran program that I have found is for iPad. Now, by the way, sorry, didn't mean to shake everything there. There is a Quranic molecule. Right. Find this again here. There is a Quranic app or module. Module is what I was looking for. Module in Accordance. So here is the Accordance. So you've got Shakir's translation. You've got the Quran tagged, except it doesn't seem to be linked to Shakir. And then in tools and stuff, word lists and things. But even Accordance does have at least something available to you. But still, by far, there used to be an old Windows program called Alim 6.0, I think was the last edition. And then there was another one that I found really useful that I had to run some special program to make it work. Wine, I think it was. But they haven't been supported forever, as far as I know. And they were Windows only. So this is called My Quran. Not the most ostentatious name, but here's My Quran. There's the light that I stare into the whole time we're doing this. There, it's sort of easier to see that way. My Quran, and you might say, how's that supposed to help me? It's in Arabic. It has transliteration and translation below it, and then it has roots. So you can, if you do know some, you can go in and it'll give you the root. So you choose a particular term, and then you hit the root, and then it brings up all the uses in the an exhaustive concordance, the entirety of the Quran. So you can really sort of check your translation to see whether it's playing around which sometimes it is. But MyKadon is the app that I use very frequently, and I highly recommend to you. And so I had queued up the first text that I said in last program we'd finally get into, and I went too long, but I do want to read it, because what I said we wanted to do is we wanted to look at Surah 4 and Surah 5. We could go back all the way to Surah 3. Like I said, there's an entire chapter on this in Whatever Christian Needs to Know About the Quran that I would recommend to your reading. But, O people of the scripture, this is not Shakir. This is the Sahih International Translation, which I found to be pretty solid. It really is. O people of the scripture, it's Alal Kitab, people of the book, literally. Do not commit excess in your religion. Do not go beyond the bounds. I've tried to pronounce the Arabic word ta'aglu, but my Scottish tongue, I can do a Scottish brogue, but I can't say that word. It means to go beyond it. There's a proper boundary, and you keep going beyond it. And so the people of the scriptures, and this is specifically addressed to Christians here, do not commit excess. Do not go beyond the bounds in your deen, your religion, or say about Allah except the truth. Do not say anything about Allah that is over the bounds. You have to say only what is truthful about Allah. The Messiah, Jesus, the son of Mary, was but a messenger. And the form that is used there is properly translated with that is only, is but a messenger. Some people have tried to say, no, you're emphasizing that. No, I have proven to my own satisfaction anyways from the grammatical sources that these translations are rendering it correctly. Jesus, son of Mary, was but a messenger of Allah, and his word which he directed to Mary, and a soul created at a command from him. Now that's actually a text a lot of missionaries have used down through the years. I'm not sure if they used it fully appropriately. But like when it says, and his word which he directed to Mary, well, a lot of Christians are like, word, logos, John 1:1. Let's run with it. I don't have any evidence that the author of the Quran had any earthly idea what logos meant, how it was used, anything like that. So I've always hesitated at that point, to be honest with you. Besides that, the Muslim interpretation is that the fulfillment of this is Allah saying to Mary, be, and Jesus became. So it's just simply a command rather than an overshadowing of the Holy Spirit, which Muhammad didn't understand either. A word which directed to Mary, and a spirit or a soul created at a command from him. Created at a command is in brackets because there's nothing in the Arabic that says created at a command. So believe in Allah and his messengers. Do not say three. Now, I think it's the Yusuf Ali translation, it says, do not say Trinity. I agree that that's what it's talking about, but it doesn't use the word for Trinity. It uses the ordinal number three. And so it's proper to say, do not say three, desist, still very smoky, desist, it is better for you. Indeed, Allah is but one God. So as I've said over and over and over again, and as hopefully we'll pick up if the Lord allows me to get to Reno, and I'm just doubtful that's going to work. I think it's going to be the next day from Vegas. I'll be honest with you, because not only am I hooking up with Chris, but my wife's actually going to be in Reno, and we're not going to be able to see each other very long, but she gave me some stuff that I have in here that I need to give to her. And you put all that together and chances are not good, but you never know, you know? So anyway, I've said over and over and over again, every time the Quran says, do not say three. The next line is, there is only one God. In any fair, rational, sane world where interpretation is driven by common sense, taking into consideration context, it is self-evident that the Quran is accusing the Trinity of polytheism. That the author of the Quran believes that Christians are polytheists. There is no question about that. None. And so, is that the truth? Is that the issue? Is that really what the issue is? So that's the text we're going to start with. There's more that comes afterwards, obviously, all the way through ayat 175. But I used up all our time and went really long. And I'm going to try to jump on another program here as quick as I can with someone who's contacted me through Twitter. So we're going to, I sort of have a bunch of checklists, boxes to check off for this trip. And who knows, maybe by the time I get done, I will actually have to hook up the unit in the rain. You know, just get all the experience you can, get it all done. So you can go, yeah, done that before. We can get it done. And here's what the issue is going to be. And here's good dividing line, then do somebody else's program and see how it all works. So there you go. So again, your support making all this possible. Thank you very, very much for it. Continue on. I think the part of this leg, I got 11.3 miles to the gallon. Of course, I was paying $4 a gallon, but hey, there you go. Thank you, President Biden. We appreciate you. All right. Anyways, so just watch the app. Watch for us on social media. When I'm road tripping, could just pop up at any moment. You never know. I might be beside the road someplace, and something I want to say, and ding. And if you don't have the app, you won't know. So get the app so it can let you know. All right, thanks for watching the program today. We'll see you next time on The Dividing Line. God bless.